Thank you very much, sisters in Christ. It's a very great privilege for me to be with you, and already we have the devil sitting on the microphone. There we go. Okay. All right. It's the devil. It's not me. Okay. It's very funny that I'm here, really. What happened was on Thursday morning, I got a notice from American Airlines that they had canceled my flight because of the hurricane. I was in Virginia Beach. And so I called them up and I said, I need to fly to California tomorrow, Friday. And they said, well, it was noon about that time in Thursday. And they said, well, can you be at Williamsburg Airport at 3:30? We can get you out on a flight, but we're canceling all of our flights on Friday. So I went into my boss's office and said, can I leave work? I have a group of Catholic women that we're going to talk about prayer. And she said, go. So sometimes it's an advantage to teach in a Christian university. I teach at Regent University in Virginia. So anyway, I flew in on Thursday, and here I am. So very great to be here. Teresa of Avila, we're going to talk about today to start us off. And I love Teresa, especially, I think, for us as Catholic women. Teresa resonates because, remember, her work was written to her sisters. Her books were written to her fellow nuns and her sisters, and so they have a kind of, obviously profound theologically, but also a woman-to-woman kind of thing going on in a lot of her work, most of her work. And so there's a sharing aspect, and so I appreciate her from that standpoint. Sometimes reading Teresa of Avila, it's like listening to your friends talking about, your small group talking about God. Although if there was anyone like Teresa of Avila in my small group, I would never say another word and I would just listen. Okay, well, so what I want to do here is, and I just realized I'm in the dark, but that's probably appropriate. So it's a metaphor, but we have this here show. What I want to do in the beginning, just a quick intro to Teresa. And then I want to talk about what she says about the beginnings of prayer. So The Interior Castle is her masterwork on prayer, but we're only going to go up to room 4 because if anybody here is moving past room 4, then you don't need to hear anything that I have to say. You are in the summits of prayer. But most of us are kind of stuck in somewhere between what she calls the courtyard and room 4 of the Interior Castle. So we're going to talk about her two big metaphors for prayer. One is the garden and the other one is the castle. Just a couple of words of intro in case you don't know about Teresa Sanchez de Cepeda y Ahumada. She was from Avila, Spain. She lived there most of her life, the third child of two very, very devout Catholic parents. Her mother was very tender-hearted. Her father was very strict. And when she was 11, her grandfather was a Jewish convert to Christianity on her father's side, so and had been kind of compelled to become a Christian. And so Teresa of Avila, she has Jewish roots. Her father purchased the knighthood to try and get the family over the scandal of being, from Jewish roots, to try to. And so she grew up in a very prestigious, pretty wealthy family, had a very good education for a woman at that time. But her biggest event of her young life was her mother died when she was 15. And then she went through a terrible, terrible crisis of what is life about, ends up deciding she wants to be a nun. Her father opposes it. So sometime between 18 and 20, she joins the Carmelite convent in the neighborhood. And it is a very liberal place. Her father didn't want her to go there because the nuns there were not really serious. And so they kind of talked a lot. They partied a lot, et cetera. No joke, they partied a lot. And Teresa kind of got into that. She spent the first 15 years of religious life partying in the parlor with friends and having a grand old time. And then she got very, very ill and then had a kind of, what am I doing here? And she says in her life, God permitted that her kind of beginning would be such a mess, really, so that she would be humble forever. And then also so that all of us, everyone who would hear from her could say, well, if this woman could make it to mystical union with God, after wasting 15 years in a convent playing around than anybody can. All right? And so Teresa of Avila's journey should give us all hope. Huh? Oh, sorry, I was supposed to be blessing all of these things here, and I'm not. Okay, good. All right, now, just to start us off, prayer. What is prayer? Teresa says prayer is nothing else than an intimate sharing between friends. Think about that, an intimate sharing between friends. So everything she's going to say to us now is helping us get to a more intimate sharing with Christ as the best and greatest, most loving and perfect friend of our life. This icon is an icon of the castle, right? The castle. And so for Teresa, the castle of our soul, that Jesus lives in the heart of the castle of our soul. And he dwells there waiting for us. And that prayer is about turning inward to meet him in the castle of our soul. This is the work of a lifetime. I had a Carmelite nun, one of the Alhambras, come and talk to my sophomores at APU. We were reading Interior Castle. And she said to me, so this nun, she was about 78 or so, one of the, you know, Alhambras. And she said, how many months are you going to be reading Interior Castle with your students? And I said, well, actually, 2 weeks. And she went, 2 weeks? I've been reading it for 47 years. And I was like, oh, well, do your best, you know. But this this work is, Teresa is a doctor of the church, so proclaimed by Paul VI, meaning that her doctrine is eminent. That means it's good for everyone. And first female doctor of the church with Catherine of Siena, and she's the doctor of prayer. That means of all of the doctors of the church and all of the saints, Teresa and what she has to say on prayer from the church's standpoint is the most important and most eminent. So she should be someone that you are becoming familiar with if you're not already, okay? Now, the other point she makes, though, is that this thing we're talking about, prayer, is something we have to kind of learn to turn in on ourselves. It's a hard thing to do because of all of our distractions, everything we're going to talk about. But she says, don't despair because you can work on it for 50 years and kind of make slow progress in prayer. Or one day you could be completely, in the middle of your own mess of your life and God could pluck you right into the seventh room of mystical union. For example, St. Paul. Like, maybe you've had some really bad, rainy Tuesday afternoons with God, but you've probably never had letters to go murder Christians the way Paul did. He was on his way to murder the Christians, to arrest and murder the Christians of Damascus. And he says, I was breathing murderous threats. And Jesus knocks him on the ground and shows him the beatific vision. So you should never despair, no matter how bad you are. Huh? All right, so she says, I believe that God helps those who set out to do great things for his sake, and never fails those who trust in him alone. Okay, so, all right. So we're going to start with the garden metaphor. And I'm sorry you guys can't see this, but I'm going to have to read all these. So the garden metaphor is from her book of her life. And so this is her autobiography that she was pressed into writing by her spiritual director. In chapters 11 through 18, she talks about the four ways to water the garden of our soul in prayer. So for Teresa, this metaphor is that your soul is a garden, and it's either a well-watered, fertile garden with soft dirt and airy dirt that God can plant new things in, new wonderful plants that can make many fruits, or it's a parched and arid desert. So she says, God is the one who prepares the soil and plants the seeds and plants the plants. But our job is to cultivate the garden. So God is the master gardener. We are the assistant gardener. We each have our plot, okay? All right, so the first step, and I'm not going to do all the talking here because one of the reasons I wanted to have them remove Jesus is because I want you to talk to each other a little bit while we're well, we're doing this, and I hate talking in front of Jesus like that, so I thought, you know, I'm old school. So, okay, so, so the first step is God, the master gardener, prepares the soul. So Teresa says, a beginner must look on himself as one setting out to make a garden for his Lord's pleasure on most unfruitful soil, which abounds in weeds. His Majesty roots up the weeds and puts in good plants instead. Let us reckon that this is already done when the soul decides to practice prayer. So you just have to say, Jesus, I want to pray better. I want to meet you in my heart. And then he gets going, the master gardener, according to Teresa. So let's talk about preparing the soil. When you think about a farmer, what are the things the farmer has to do to get the soil ready for the plant? So I came up with a few. One is, and I've had my little farm here in Glendora, my little strip of garden, which I loved, and I would, you know, amazing. You can grow anything here. I grew up in New England, so I was always in awe of how everything loves California to grow here. But anyway, the first thing you have to do is turn the dirt over. You know, you take your spade and, or your pitchfork, you turn the dirt over, and then you break up the clumps. Hit it with whatever you have, you know, and then you kind of have to aerate the soil. So again, you're trying to get down deep. You're trying to, the soil is just like cement. You're trying to break it up and put holes in it. You're piercing the soil. And then finally, so you rake it all, you get it smooth, and then you furrow the soil. Furrow is to carve the, the furrows, the rows, you're going to carve the place in the dirt to plant the seeds. So think about these four things. In a spiritual sense, getting you ready for prayer, the master gardener, Jesus, is going to turn your dirt over. What does that mean? What does that mean, to turn your dirt over? Huh? For me, it means sometimes in order to have us move ahead, God has to turn our lives upside down. There has to be something that's our comfort zone that we are settled with, and we say, this is who I am, and this is who God is, and we're in a rut. And in order to move us to the next level, Jesus, it's like pulling the carpet out from underneath us for our own good. I want you to think about, have you ever had that experience of having God turn your dirt over? You know, expose something in you that, you know, you were covering over for the sake of your getting closer to him. Number two, break up the hard clumps. For me, this is our stubbornness, that before we can move ahead in prayer, whatever it is that we're stubbornly clinging to, whether it's a pattern of sin that we've told ourselves we need, right? Or a way to pray, or a group of friends who are maybe not good for us, some vice or just ungodly habit, something we don't do, whatever the clump is, Jesus might have to break it up for our own good. Piercing the ground. Thomas Aquinas in his Summa talks about love. One of the stages of love is what he calls melting and piercing. That it's a sign of love that we melt, that we kind of merge with God, we merge with whatever we love, but then also we now become soft and open to having holes pierced in us. And the word, you know, pierced, very much like Jesus on the cross. So this idea of us moving ahead in prayer, being dependent on being pierced. What in us has to be pierced so that we can hear God's voice? Is it our ego? Is it our self-righteousness? Is it our schedule? What is it, huh? And then finally, the furrowing. You know, this comes from a psalmist too. One of the psalms says, "Oh Lord, you furrow our hearts." That means digging deep, welts in us. That Jesus is going to carve out in our souls and in our hearts a place for the things he wants to do in us. These are going to be new plants. But that means there's a thing in us that has to be carved out. What is it? I ask you this because if you are here today at a women's retreat, you're giving your whole day at a lovely Sunday in Southern California. The weather's finally starting to be nice enough that you can go out and play. But here you are, sitting in the dark. This is you saying, "Jesus, come, Lord Jesus, I want to know you better." Which Teresa says, the gardener is now off and running with that. You have given him your permission. Which means, brace yourself. Turning over dirt, breaking hard clumps, piercing, and furrowing. I want you to take a minute now or two, a couple of minutes, talk to the persons next to you, groups of three or four, anybody at the top of your head. What are any of these? What do they look like? Help each other out so that we can all recognize what God might be doing in us. And here's the 411. All of it hurts. All of it hurts us because we don't want to move. So take a couple minutes. Terry, can we put the lights on so they can see each other? It's a little too romantic in here, so very good. Okay, so you're going to take a couple minutes, so talk as quiet, as you can to the people around you and share if you had any of these experiences of being furrowed, being broken, being pierced, or turned over.
I don't want cold water. I'm
yes,
gonna
thank
tap.
You. Oh,
no,
this is fine.
I've always found cold water hurts your throat. You're okay,
oh, does it?
Right?
I'm okay. Yeah. So
good. You're okay because I tell myself don't do it.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is why I wanted Jesus out. I didn't want them
to. I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Too bad this is not. They can't read the words. So, but anyway, we got a nice screen here, a nice big clear screen. When I took it to Protestant churches, they have like.
They got things that just roll right now. So now I know why. That makes sense. Uh-huh. Usually Monsignor tells us that if we're just giving presentations on the faith,
it's okay. No, it's fine, yeah. But this is, a retreat conference is a little more chatty. And it's, you just don't want people chatting in front of Jesus.
So, you make the point.
Yeah.
How do you like those, somebody, a benefactor, do you like my communion rails?
Yeah.
I was thinking you when I knew.
Thank you. And they were going to rip them out, but they're fine. They don't have money to put anything else in right now.
I can talk to Father, but he's upset.
Well, I think the sign being up now will help that you have the sign there. But I think one of the things you could do is paper the neighborhood of Covina and say, make 5,000 flyers and paste them all around. Yeah,
I'm going to meet with Father Sunday, so I'm going to bring it.
I think that would be good. Yeah, okay. All right, we can turn the light off. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. That's a conversation that you can continue over lunch and during the breaks, okay? I just wanted to throw it out there. Okay, so the next thing, after God gets the soil, the master gardener gets your soil ready, the party's not over, because one of the things he's also going to do is pull the weeds. Pull the weeds. Now, this is a picture of just the most, the 20 most common weeds. So what I'm saying to you is there are a variety of weeds in your soul that we all have that are clogging up our spiritual progress. What are our weeds that Jesus needs to pull up? And Teresa's very clear that that Jesus is the one who can pull the weeds. He's the one who does it. We don't pull our own weeds. Now, here's a great line. You can't read it at all. Sorry about this, guys. I mean, I worked hard on this thing, but it's really just for me. And I got to tell you, it's beautiful. But anyway, you don't know what you're missing here. Yeah. So here's a line from the National Gardening Association. They said, when weeding, the best way to make sure you are removing a weed and not a valuable plant is to pull on it. If it comes out of the ground easily, it's a valuable plant. Okay, let's talk about weeds that hinder prayer, Weeds that hinder prayer. So all of us are kind of hoping our weeds are like this, And so some of the like the minor weeds that we all have that hinder our prayer would be a lack of focus, a lack of discipline. The inability to make time, the need for stimulation, right? We're so overstimulated that when we go to prayer and we kind of turn all the stuff off, it's just like, I fall asleep. I don't know about you. I sit there, I get all in the chapel and I turn off my phone and get my book and then, that's right. My body goes, oh, there's nothing going on. Turn out. Then there's the fear of silence. Many of us are afraid of the silence. As soon as we get in the car, turn on that sound. Because what comes to us in the silence, we don't want to have to deal with. Impatience. It's like, okay, Jesus, I've been here for like 40 seconds. So we want, and Teresa mentions this over and over, that one of the obstacles to growing in prayer is we want it now. And that this is a relationship. And we want mystical union now. And we don't even know who he is. We don't have any real personal contact with him, really, enough. So those are the kind of minor weeds that we all share. Now, there's another kind of weed that probably you have two or three of, maybe. I hope not. We all probably do. This is the serious weed. Look at that weed. It goes down really deep. It has very complex root systems that reach into every aspect of your life. I'm thinking the weed like pride. It's like it touches everything. And when you pull it out, it breaks off and then grows up again. You can cut the top off of the plant, the weed, but the root is still in there. Like this weed, to get it out, you have to dig really deep into the garden. You have to really do almost a kind of surgery. And this is what Jesus has to do in us. So this would be certain habits of sin. According to Teresa, that there are certain habits of sin. They go very deep in us. They touch a lot of aspects of our life. And they hinder us from moving into real relationship with Jesus. You know, I had a spiritual director years ago. His name was Father Benedict Groeschel. Anybody heard of Father Benedict? Yeah, when I was a nun, I was a nun for 9 years, and I lived in New York for 2 of those years, and he was my spiritual director. And I would work in the book center in New York, in Manhattan, and I would get a phone call. Sister, I'm coming into the city. I'll hear your confession. Get me a sandwich. So I would buy him a sandwich, and sure enough, in the middle of a snowstorm, this Capuchin with bare feet and sandals would come clopping in. He'd be like, okay, sister, come in the back room. And we go in the back room of the bookstore, and he would hear my confession and say unbelievably profound things. I remember one time he's like giving me this really profound thing about spiritual growth, and he had an onion stuck in his beard, like hanging off the beard. And, you know, and it was like so Franciscan, but great. But anyway, one of the things, Father came and gave a retreat to the nuns one time, and he said something that he said, don't think that you can be entertaining X-rated fantasies on a regular basis and doing amazing miracles for God at the same time. One has to go. There are certain things that cannot live together in our life as believers and as saints. So as long as you hate your sin, you're fine. It's St. Bernadette of Lourdes was asked, what's the difference between, you know, sinners in heaven, sinners who are saved and sinners who go to hell? And she said, sinners who go to hell are the ones who love their sin. They nurture their sin. They tell themselves, I need this. I need this. So whatever that is, you have to ask God to make you aware of it. Chances are it's so deep in you, it feels like just who you are. This is just who I am. Whatever it is, huh? Making God in your own image, huh? God and I, we understand each other. He gets me and why I have to do what I do. Presumption. You know, I'm not that bad. I'm Sicilian by nationality, and we all suffer from the national sin of presumption. You know, we're okay. We're not that bad. You know, we have the mafia, but we're not that bad. Right? So this kind of thing, we have to open ourselves and say, Jesus, you have permission to do whatever you have to do to dig out of me this deep weed. Okay. Next, we have, after the garden's ready now, we have God planting the seeds of prayer. So what are the seeds of prayer that Jesus has planted in you such that you're here? So anything that's resonating with you that I might be saying. So here's a few seeds of prayer that Jesus has planted in you. And you go, oh yeah, I've heard that one. I felt that one. So one of them is the awareness of our own neediness. I feel this almost every time I go to communion. When I step into the aisle, since I was a little girl, it was like, how much I stand in need of you. I almost think of, that's another Father Groeschel metaphor. He's like, communion is like the divine gas station. You're empty. And you come up to communion and you go, amen, boom, get you filled up. Right? Filled up with God. Filled up with God's life and grace. Like, that's what communion is for us. And so, but you have to approach it saying, I'm empty. This is the beginning of God filling us. The next one is the impulse to pray for someone. You know, I've been sporadic in my rosary. Oh, rosary's so boring. It's like 8 hours to say a rosary, right? You know, 15 minutes, people. You know, I learned that, right? But anyway, you know, I've fallen behind in my rosary. And then my nephew joined the Marine Corps. And I said, that's it. I'm going to say a rosary for him every single day while he's away from us. And I did it for him. Isn't that weird how we can do things for people we love that we won't do for ourselves or even for God? But you know this need to pray when someone you love is in a situation that you cannot do anything about and you're worried. And suddenly, prayer is easy. So, you know what? As we used to say in the convent, God can work with that. Go with it. Number three, the example of the saints. So one of the reasons we should read the lives of the saints, listen to stories about the saints, is because when we hear what they do, we kind of shamed. It's like, oh, I want to be like Mother Teresa. It's like Mother Teresa prayed 5 hours a day. Yeah, I don't want to be like Mother Teresa. You know, I want the part where she gets to Harvard and got an award. But you can't separate Mother Teresa's 5 hours a day of prayer from the miracles she did. She left 27,000 followers when she died. All she had to do was pray 5 hours a day. Can you imagine the difference in your life if you prayed 5 hours a month? So So, okay, so the example of the saints. And the saints, also I'd say the saints, big capital S saints, but also the people around you in your life. Let the people around you look at them and say, wow, those, you know, I was a parishioner at St. Dorothy's when we lived here in Glendora. And they have that Eucharistic Adoration Chapel. And there's almost never less than 5 people there. And I would be amazed by these people. Like, wow, they're here. They come here. And it was good for me to see their example. So give each other good example and profit from it. Number 4, awe and wonder at the natural world. That this is a beautiful seat of prayer, right? I mean, how many times have you been... You go out up into the mountains, or you go, oh, I'm staying on, I have a friend, and she's been trying to get me to stay with her forever, and she lives, she just moved to Hermosa, and I didn't know, really, I hadn't been over there, I didn't know, but I stayed with her, because I don't have a place, and so I got up in the morning, she's like 2 doors from the beach in Hermosa. I opened my window, and I was like, this is a good place, right? You know, this is a good place. Got out and I walked on the beach and you smell the ocean and everything. And you just say, oh, and the sun, you know, the sun rising over there. And it's just glorious. And your heart swells. So we need that. We need the unmediated presence of God in creation to make us want to pray. How great thou art. And then finally, devotional practices. Huh? So, days of recollection. Hopefully, I'm like, you're going, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, right? That's why you come to these things, so that you say, I've got to make a new beginning. Pilgrimages. You should go on pilgrimages to the missions, the beautiful missions, or go to the Immaculate Conception Basilica in Washington. Go to Rome. 2 friends I'm staying with, they're going to Rome next month. For the first time, and they're planning out their whole pilgrimage. Pilgrimages are great for making us restart. Huh? Spiritual reading, etc., all of these devotional practices. So these are the seeds of prayer, out of which they're going to grow into plants that make great fruits for you, for your families, for the church, for the world. Now, second step is that we water our garden with a well. So now the soil's been prepared. Jesus has planted the seeds in us. And now we say, okay, I need to pray. And so Teresa says, when we're starting out, it's like we go to our well and we pump. And we get some water and then we pour it on our soul. And then we go, oh, wow, that's a pretty heavy bucket. I need a minute. I need some me time, Jesus. All right? And then we go back to the well and we pump and we get another bucket and we throw it on ourselves. And she says, the problem is, by the time you get back to the garden, your soul with your well bucket, it's all dried up again. And so she says, usually there's like one part of us that we water a lot and the rest of the garden never gets touched. What is she talking about here? She's saying that the soul, that our own efforts to make our souls fertile and life-producing and fluffy and ready to have growth, our own efforts leave us in very unevenly ready and very exhausted. Having said that, she says, you need to do it because the effort you exert, trying to stay open to God, huh? Doing all your spiritual practices. So what would these water, what does this water be? I have to make time out of my week to pray. Out of my day to pray. Twice a time, day. You know, at least morning and evening prayer. But then maybe I make a couple hours of adoration during the week. See, you say, that's your bucket. It's like, I can't find an hour. Excuse me. I'm one of you. I have played many games on Facebook, too. I have watched many episodes of Beat Bobby Flay. And Chopped. Just 2 episodes. 1 episode of Chopped could be an hour of adoration. See, it's not that we don't have the time. It's that we don't want to give that time because we've already told ourselves we need it. So that's part of your bucket, looking at your schedule and saying, what do I have to rearrange here? I have to get myself to church. I have to get myself to that quiet place. I have to find a saint that speaks to me. I have to read a little bit. I have to be in a small group. I need an accountability group of people who pray. This is all us doing our bucket work. And Teresa says it's hot, tiring for us. We don't get a lot of satisfaction out of it, but Jesus watches it, and his heart is just so open and tender by our little teeny efforts. So think of the story of the prodigal son. When the son was still far away, it's just like he had turned around, he was still far away. The father saw him and goes running on him, right? So we need that little effort, these little things. So another thing that would be part of your bucket time is, okay, I am going to learn to sit quietly in the silence. I'm going to begin with what, Teresa says, always begin with vocal prayer. So you have two or three prayers, of good vocal prayers that you that speak to your day, speak to your worries of the day. And then she wants you to read a part of Scripture slowly, a little bit, and then say, Jesus, what are you saying to me here? So for you to do that and not fall asleep. And if you fall asleep to go, oops, sorry, Jesus, let's start again. Oh, Lord, what you have to work with. Huh? In the convent, we used to call it, yes, Lord, because from the back you could see the nuns going, yes, Lord, yes, Lord, right? So the beginning stage when you really start to pray, it's going to be hard. It's like starting a diet. And most diets fail in the first 2 days. Mine in the first 2 hours. Right? It's going to be hard. Expect that. But say, Jesus, I want to know you. Please bless my pathetic little efforts. Okay. Number two. Oh, and she says, by the way, one of the things that makes the garden very watered in this stage is that the bucket is also supplemented by our own tears. So all your little efforts and then your own, oh God, I'm so pathetic. And that makes you feel grief, and that touches the heart of God so much. He wants to meet you in your soul so much more than you do. He's waiting there. All right, so now another thing about the well, and just to say, some of our wells are very deep to get the water out. So depending on your issues, if you have a really, really, really complicated schedule, that's a deep well. But you're going to have to deal with it. Okay, the next step, Teresa says, is we graduate to a water wheel. So she says there's an aqueduct coming down from the mountains, and then we have the water wheel, and this makes the water flow in more abundance periodically. But the difference is now we look at the mountains and say, okay, mountains, come send water. And so what we're learning here is that moving ahead in prayer is so much about waiting on the Lord. We show up and we raise our eyes to the mountains and say, Lord, if I am going to have a beautiful time of connection with you, that I walk out of here like Joan of Arc, it's from you. And so this surrender, you give him the time and then you surrender. And then the gardener then, because we are standing with our hands empty and humble in front of Jesus, he can begin to send more graces to us. But it takes that surrender. Lord, I'm sitting here. I've been sitting here for, I've been doing this for a month. 2 hours a week I'm giving you. And this is important time to me. And nothing is happening. But you know what, Lord? I'm going to stay at it. And then she says, then the blessings begin to flow. The third one that happens is then the master gardener, at a certain point, just when you're at the point of, I feel nothing. I'm not getting anything. She says, the master gardener will cause the river close by to overflow into your garden. That is, you're going to have an experience of the power, love, mercy of God personally for you while you're praying. And your whole garden is going to be saturated. You don't need a lot of these in life. I've had like three. But you know what? It's enough. And you know, I was a nun for 9 years. We prayed 3 hours a day in my community. But I've had a few experiences that were undeniable, spiritual, transcendent experiences of God touching my life in prayer. And it's like, yeah, okay, so I'm pretty much done. Okay, Jesus, you can go do that to other people because I've got enough here to keep me going, right? You don't need this to happen every week. It's that powerful. So she says, our task when the river overflows like this and God saturates us with his presence is to surrender to the movements and inspirations of grace in these moments, right? So God washes over you while you're praying. You feel his presence. You feel surrounded by love. And then he says, call your mother-in-law. And you go, Jesus, why do you have to ruin this moment? Really, Lord? You know, you don't know her as well as I do. She really is a spiritual obstacle to me, Jesus. For my own soul's growth, I need to hold her in contempt. Right? I mean, there's that thing, that intimation of grace, that Jesus doesn't just... Teresa says, Jesus doesn't send his consolations just so you can go, woo! What a rush! It's like Holy Six Flags! Jesus sends spiritual consolations because there is a fruit that needs to be given to the world through your prayer. Given to your family, given to yourself, given to the church. So, there you go. Okay, the last stage, she says, is this is when you have the habits of prayer. You do it regularly. You do all the stuff. You live a sacramental life. You're going to confession regularly. You're receiving the Eucharist. You're reading the scriptures. You're reading spiritual things. You're living a Catholic life. And so you're living the habits of prayer. She says, now the gardener sends rain every morning in your soul. That you are now not going from being parched to saturated, but you're living in a fertile relationship. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so we have to let the gardener work with us. We have to let ourselves work with the gardener. We've got to put the effort in to tend the garden. All right. Can I just take 5 minutes more? Okay, so now I'm supposed to talk about the interior castle, and I just finished the volume. So I'm going to say just a couple of words about the interior castle because my time is up. So the interior castle, again, is her other big metaphor, that there's this circular castle of the soul, and Jesus is in the middle of it. And so basically it's active growth and then infused growth. So very much like the garden thing, it starts out, we are trying to make ourselves available to God, and then God then takes over. You give God permission to reveal himself to you. And you have to get used to what the voice of God sounds like. So just quickly, I want to just talk about the initial stage of the castle, because this is where she says most human beings live their whole lives, the courtyard. Many linger in the courtyard, not caring to enter further. Filled with vermin and crawling bugs. The soul ends up chasing these things around the courtyard instead of entering into the castle. She says the way into the castle is through prayer and meditation. What does she mean by chasing the vermin around? So you go to pray. So there's two levels of vermin. One is like squirrels. So you go to pray and it's like, taxes! Oh, you go to pray and it's like, car payment! You go to pray and it's like, my son's girlfriend! Oh, right, you know, squirrel! It's like, again, you finally have a quiet moment, you go to pray, and immediately you start chasing squirrels. So all of the saints, Teresa says, when that happens, and all the saints say it in one way, but Teresa says, as soon as you become aware that you're chasing a squirrel, say, oh, excuse me, Jesus, I'm sorry, I'm pathetic and distracted, where were we? And you calmly and gently reset yourself in the scripture story that you are looking at. You don't go, oh, I can't do this, I hate it. Oh. Gently redirect. You cannot shock Jesus. He's been at this for 10,000 years. Right? He knows us. So that's the first level of chasing vermin during prayer. And because of that, she says most people never get into their own soul. They just can't stop chasing the squirrels. But the second level of vermin is, and I found this great quote. This is Billy Graham's sister, and she's very holy. I met her a couple times. Her name is Anne Graham Lotz. She says, the devil resists serious, focused prayer because he's defeated by it. And so the devil will try to attack our concentration in prayer. He will try to confuse or contradict the content of our prayers. He will do his best to distract and divert us in prayer so that we are crippled by inconsistency. Teresa says, the devil will try to upset you during your prayer time by accusing you of being unworthy of the blessing you have received. Simply remain cheerful and do your best to ignore the devil's nagging. If need be, even laugh at the absurdity of the situation. This is why I love Teresa of Avila. She says, Satan, the epitome of sin, is accusing you of sin. She says, when the devil reminds you of your past, remind him of his future. Teresa of Avila, right? So this vermin, this particular kind of vermin that gets in the way of our prayer is the memory of our sin, the thought of our sin. So you go to pray, and it's like you open the door, and you say, hi, Jesus. And Jesus says, hi. And you go, oh, I'm so disgusting. I know. I did this, and I did that, and I know. And my mother, and the things I did at work. Yeah, I know. And Jesus is there, hello. Hello, and you're parading in front of him with your guilt and your remorse. And he's like, I love you. So try to think of it as your own child. If your three-year-old came in and said, you know, mommy, I did this and I did that and I did this. And you're like, okay, baby, I love you. So it's not that we don't need to live in the awareness of our sins. We do. But we need to simply say, I'm sorry, but I'm here, Jesus, now because I want to love you more, and I want to love you more than I love my sin. And just be simple about it. And just do that, huh? And so Teresa's going to say that don't chase that vermin. The devil will just sit there and accuse you during your prayer time. Okay. All right, so that's a good enough beginning into the interior castle. Hopefully you'll pick up the book and do more. But thank you very much now. So now we have a little break.
Yep, 15 yeah, minutes.
15 minutes. So feel free to talk about any of this together, and I'll talk to you later. Thank you.